Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs.
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of
come on.
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It's the Sports City Chefs. It's the Callers Cookout. You're with the villain, the maniacal one, taking off the mask and expose the raw flesh of rather ugly brother that flows. It's gorgeous. We're doing good in his building. Calling number is always 929-477-2759. You with the... We're with you for the next 90 minutes talking some sports, going around the horn. You know, it's good versus evil, and or good always wins. But listen, you can't be a hero without a villain. And a hero needs a villain, and a villain needs a hero. I got the best hero in the world. I got my main man, TP Timeless, in the building. TP, what's going on, bro?
I done took a blazer, loosened up the tie. Stepped aside, the Kitchen Timeless is alive. Welcome back to the Cookout. It's your boy TP Timeless. Open this thing up. Happy post 4th of July to everybody out there trying to celebrate this specific day in American history. A lot of stuff to get into. The NBA Finals are amongst us. A lot of news and notes to jump into. This baseball season is interesting as it must. They have to pay attention to these numbers around them if they aren't. We got the coffee in the building, and oh, yes, we are just a few weeks away from the NFL season kicking off, at least preseason. Some news and notes out of the Wisconsin area as well. So just stay tuned. We'll jump into it. We'll throw some of this stuff on the grill as best as possible. Ooh, I can't wait.
Absolutely, man. We got a lot of stuff. And the Olympics, man. I'm always excited for the Olympics a year late, but – better late than never. So we got a lot. It's going to be a hot summer, man. There's a lot of stuff popping off, and the cooks are ready to fill your belly, fill your fat. So also we got with us another chef in the building, Sizzling Seeds, a simmering seed. I don't know what we want to call them. The main man, the big homie, Steve. Steve's in the building. What's going on, brother?
Well, just don't call me late for the grill out. That's all I ask. Otherwise, you can call me whatever you want. Glad to be here on the show today. Sizzled Steve, the hot taker, ready with some hot takes on the NBA Finals. Shohei Ohtani, and I got questions about the NFL. I got questions. I think we should do the division coverage starting tonight. Start with the West, and since go West to East. AFC West, NFC West. Questions we have about each team in those divisions. We'd love to bring that up, if that's okay with you. Villain and UTP, because I know this is your show, and I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut. So it's good to be on there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we can always throw it on there. It's for the callers, for the people. You know, the villain's here. He's here for the people. I mean, I'm not the bad guy. I'm here for you. I'm here for the people. But, you know, we're going to get it popping. I got to give a shout-out to Big E, Eazy-E. Not going to make it tonight. You know, his father is, you know, in the hospital, so he's with him. So prayers up for him. We love you, big bro. So hope everything's good there.
Speaking
of
which, on FX last night, Dylan, I apologize. On FX last night, they had Straight Outta Compton. Second time I saw that, first time on TV. I was about Eazy-E and the rise of Eazy-E and Ruthless Records in the fall. Watching it on TV after seeing the theater several years ago was very, very sobering. It's a great, great movie. But, yeah, Eazy-E. Miss him tonight on the show and miss Eazy-E in life because he was one tremendous rap star when he was banging with NWA and Ruthless Records way back when.
Way back when, if you heard him, we're dating ourselves. But you know, everybody knows about NWA. So yeah, definitely, Eric. You know, we're thinking about you. But let's get into it, boys. Let's get going. So let's talk some baseball. We don't get to talk a lot of baseball in here. I definitely want to talk about Shohei Ohtani because we haven't seen anybody like this guy. And they're talking about since Babe Ruth, and justifiably so because he does it on at the plate and on the mound. So just another feat for this guy to overtake. He hit his major league leading 32nd home run today, and he breaks interestingly enough Yankee star Yankee. We'll say that Hideki Matsui's regular season record for most home runs in a season by a Japanese player, and it's not even the all-star break. This guy is doing it all. I mean, I got to see him when he came to the stadium. I didn't see him in person, but it's really kind of the first time I really got to really focus on him because a lot of times he's been hurt when he's come, when the Angels have come to town. So got to actually see him and, you know, and what a performance he put on at the plate, not on the mound, but at the plate, hitting some home runs. So, he's just mashing the baseball right now. You know, TP, I'll come to you, and then, Steve, I'll come right back to you. I mean, have we ever seen anything like this guy, Ohtani? And you know, how is he the best player in baseball right now?
That's a bigger question, if he's the best player in baseball. That's a debate. I'm going to save that for last. I thank God that we are in this age that we are seeing baseball be played at this era, and I want to say from I can remember is the 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010s up until now, the early portion of 2020. This is the first time that I've ever seen it, and probably you guys have ever seen it, of a pitcher play or a regular day baseball player pitching and doing what he's able to do. And not only is he able to do that, he's hitting home runs at a clip that we have been seeing that at this familiarity. And I don't want to just say he's a Babe Ruth type player, but it is what Babe was doing, not at the clip of Babe, possibly. It could potentially be looked in if the numbers per at-bat were like that. But this is epic that we're seeing this. I was thinking about this just earlier this week. If he can break Barry Bonds' record of 73 and do this legitly. And I'm not nowhere near an AL West guy. I feel some type of, you know, sincerity and you know, sympathy for the Angels just because of one player only, and that's because of Trout. I love the way Trout plays baseball. They finally got a guy there to bring him help, and he's doing this without Trout because Trout has been out for some time due to injury. And it's like, you know, just seeing the Angels trying to get their stride and the move with them getting rid of Pujols, and Pujols is, you know, out of the roster. And for them to able to be afloat, and he's the story right now. This is epic on what Ohtani is up to. So, Ohtani's up to. So I got to give him credit for what he's up to. I think he's at his 32nd, threatened Matsui. If he's the best player in baseball, I got other names to throw up there. I like Tatis Jr., and I also like Vlad Jr. as well. So, and these are the sons of some epic players that were in the league in their day too. So that's why I said it's debatable because they're all swinging the heck out of the bat. But Ohtani, I do have to give you a ton of credit for what you're able to do to help this Angel team stay afloat and be a story in the AL West while it's still up in the air on who wants to take that division, even though, I mean, it could be clear cut across the board. But I like what Ohtani's up to right now.
Yeah, I mean, because it's funny because we're in New York and, you know, you get to see the Yankees and you get to see the Mets. And you see Jacob deGrom, who's clearly the best pitcher in baseball, mowing people down at a ridiculous clip. His whip is what? I think of like a 5.9. It's ridiculous. It's insane. And he can actually hit a little bit. He gets to the plate. He's no slouch at the plate. So you look at that, but then you see what Ohtani's doing in the West – playing every day and then pitching, it's mind-boggling. Steve, I mean, do you have an opinion on Ohtani and what he's doing out there in L.A.? I mean, we obviously haven't seen anything like this. Can he sustain it? Can he keep it going? What do you think about what he's doing? And I'll get to the last question. We'll swing it back around.
Well, I think Shohei Ohtani should change his name to Show Out Ohtani, because he is showing out this season. Have we seen anything like this in Major League Baseball? No, we haven't. Now, obviously, there's a big picture that is Major League Baseball, but if you look at one key detail, Shohei Ohtani has made a first this year. First in the All-Star game as a pitcher and a position player. Never happened. That's unprecedented. It's amazing what he's doing. I don't know if he can sustain this because he's already had elbow surgery. My guess is that at some point hitting is going to take the place of pitching. I don't think he can sustain this for the rest of his career because being pitching is a very unnatural motion. I don't know how long he can sustain that, but certainly in terms of being a batsman, he can sustain that for a long time to come. Is he the best player in baseball? He's been the best player this season, but the best player is often an argument that is never resolved. That argument is going to go on and on and on. And keep in mind, there is a guy that also plays for the Angels named Mike Trout, who has three MVPs. He's the best. He's been the best player in baseball. Has Shohei Ohtani taken a mantle? I wouldn't say at this point he has, because obviously consistency is the name of the game. Mike Trout has been nothing but consistent when he's been able to be in the lineup, which is more often than not up until the last couple of years with all the injuries. But I digress. Shohei Ohtani is definitely the greatest show in baseball, and baseball fans, casual, diehard, or otherwise, need to take notice of this guy, because this is not something that we can take for granted, certainly, even though we probably will, but that's another story. So he's having an amazing year. I am absolutely dazzled. I'm sad as a Yankee fan that he took Hideki Matsui's record, but I'm pretty sure if Hideki Matsui was asked about this, he would be thrilled for his fellow countryman Shohei Ohtani showing out the way he is and doing it for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I'm sorry, did I just say that? The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Yeah, Angels of Anaheim and Orange County.
How do you one baseball team, by the way? So, yeah. How do you Anaheim have two cities as one baseball team, by the way? That's a whole other discussion for another day.
I mean, I used to do the baseball buffet that's on Thursdays at 9 o'clock with Dave and Nate. Got to put a plug in there. And I used to say, anytime I used to talk about the Angels, I always used to say the full name: Los Angeles Angels in the Anaheim and Orange County on the coast in California on the West Coast time. You know, like I used to just go in. It's hysterical. But listen, you know, I agree with you. It's I'm not ready to put him as the best player in baseball. I think the lore of what he's doing, you know, pitching and hitting, you know, makes a strong case, and people love that kind of flavor of the month. But TP throws out some great names, Tatis, you know, Vlad Jr., who you know, after last year's rough season, you know, came in out of shape and really didn't look good last year, and then came into shape this year and is just blossomed into a terrific player, leading vote getter in the AL, and well deserved too. So I love those two picks. You know, you're right, Steve. Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. Despite those guys that TP and I just named, three MVPs. It's just that we don't see him. Either he's hurt or he's on the West Coast. And that's the shame about it. And I just wish the Angels can build a team around these two superstars that could be megastars and really build a team that we could see in the playoffs, because they deserve it. But, you know, there's a lot of great players.
Yeah, that's a baseball problem. Yeah, that's a baseball problem.
Yeah.
I mean, baseball – Mike Trout is not a guy – and I didn't mean to cut you off, but Mike Trout doesn't appear to relish the spotlight. That said, I've never known a Major League Baseball player to turn down extra money when he can get it. Where's Mike Trout getting his endorsement deals from? I think that's something that Major League Baseball needs to address. Baseball needs to market these stars like the NBA does, or, you know, NFL with quarterbacks. It's not something they've been very good at, but most people identify with an individual player more than identify for a team. Every single team I ever decided to root for was because of an individual player that I was drawn to. Magic Johnson drew me to the Lakers, Don Mattingly drew me to the Yankees, and Jerry Rice drew me to the 49ers, for example. So they really got to market these players more than they do and get these guys out in front. And I think Shohei Ohtani, along with Vlad Jr., as well as Fernando Tatis Jr., should be front and center in that campaign, because people are going to relate to these stars and people are going to get more excited about the game than maybe they are right now, especially when baseball can resume a more well-rounded brand of hitting that has been absent in the sport for several seasons now. So that's what baseball really needs to do, is increase the action and increase the marketing of some guys that are worth marketing, like a Tatis or a Shohei Ohtani or a Vlad Jr.
Yeah, and I've had this discussion on the Baseball Buffet with those guys, and you know, I have a really strong opinion on it, and I agree with you. It is a marketing problem. I think you're looking at when TP and I, when we all grew up, you know, we had guys that looked like us that were stars: Ken Griffey, Frank Thomas, except you know Tony Gwynn, Barry Bonds. You know, you could run down the line. The game is out of the inner cities, okay? So you know, there's less players that look like me that are playing baseball. It's hard to market players to get them endorsements, because everything that you need, you could pick up a basketball and play basketball. You don't need anything else to play basketball. All you need is a ball. You need cleats. You need a glove. You need a bat. You need a baseball field. There's a lot of things you need to play baseball, and that costs money. And a lot of people don't have that kind of money. So, you know, you could have your own cleat, but you're going to wear your cleat to school? No, you're going to wear it to the baseball field. You can wear your favorite basketball player's sneaker, you know, anywhere. So I think that's the problem. I think baseball has to figure out how to market these guys a little bit better. I think making the All-Star game more of a show instead of trying to make it so serious, I think, is probably where they need to start. But there's a lot of problems with baseball, and I love the sport. I love it, but there's a lot of things that they need to fix. I know guys that are going into the inner cities to teach the game. I can't remember the player that was actually he was just on TV, and I was just watching him talking about it. You know, in the off season, he's actually taking his own money to go teach in the inner city. That's what they need to do, and not just, you know, for black players, but you know, the game is now shifted, you know, down to the, you know, Central America and more, you know, Hispanic players. You know, it's a marketing problem. It's a big problem. PP, but I mean, I'll ask you, I know you kind of started, and then I'm going to bring a caller in. Who do you think is the best player if it's not Ohtani?
Right now, to be honest, I'm in love with Tatis Jr. The way that he's been balling, he's bringing fun back to the game. Even though I worry about his trot, because it's the fun that he's bringing to the game. When he gets to the third base, he does that skip. It's like it's almost, I feel like he could be borderline showing up a pitcher. And I don't know if pitchers might start throwing at him, and I don't want that to start happening, because I give Fernando Tatis Sr. credit for all that he went through in the league while he was here, to put all that he's learned into the game, into his son. And you could tell that's like his Frankenstein, and he's that young. And not only is he, like, bringing fun to the game, but he is tattooing pitchers. Like, he's tattooing them. And just to think that he's doing it in a market of San Diego, like the Padres, he got the Padres popping out west. Like, that's amazing. And what, is he's under 25, let's just say. He might be older. I don't know his specific age right now. But the way that he's playing ball, he's got it going on. Like, to me, I like Tatis Jr. I can't take anything away from Ohtani. I like him as well. This is some historical stuff that we're seeing Ohtani do right now. And Vlad Jr., I'm like, the last time we seen some incredible ball be played like this, it was in Canada, but it was in a city named Montreal, and it was his father. So it's like, I can't take too much away from all three of these guys, but I'm more Tatis Jr. than I am Ohtani. But Ohtani's up to some epic stuff that I have to give credit to and can't walk away from what he's doing. But I give Tatis Jr. the edge, because I love the skip. I love it. It's like he's in a Disney movie doing like some Mary Poppins or something. So that's what I like.
22 years old, TP. 22 years old. Wow.
That's
300 batting average. Yeah, it is. 300 batting average, 27 home runs, 58 RBIs, 22 years old. Insane. Insane. He is an amazing player. I like Okuna. But I mean, do I think he's the best player in baseball? No, but that's a guy I really like watching play. And he, to your point, he's starting to get tattooed. He got hit a couple times by the same team, square in the back, and I don't know if it was for whatever reason, maybe because he was beating them up or, you know, showing them up, but, you know, that's baseball. But I got a caller in. I want to bring him in. Calling from the 703, I don't know all the zip codes. I don't do well with the zip codes, but, you know, one of my fake nemesis, Sirius, Aaron Simmons, Sirius in the building. What's going on, brother?
You know what? For as much as we talk and communicate, you might as well recognize my zip codes and area codes, man. Golly. Shout out to everybody. You know what, sir. Shout out to everybody here in the building. TT, I heard you back there. The homie Steve, man. Welcome, man. Pleasure to see you, man. Prayers up. You know what I'm saying? To the homie Erky and his, I think it was his grandfather or his pop. I'm not too sure. I'm just reading the message wrong, but shout out to him. Let's get to work, man. How y'all doing tonight?
We're talking baseball. We're doing good. I mean, I don't know if you watched any of Ohtani, you know, pitching and hitting. I don't know if you have an opinion on it. Yeah, I mean, go for it, man. Talk to me.
You know, honestly, it's something that I'm enjoying seeing it, to be honest with you. It's something that I don't want to say has never been done, but, you know, at the clip that he's doing it, it's insane, you know. And the funny thing about it is, you know, he's playing in the AL, you know what I'm saying, where normally, you know, teams kind of DH the pitcher spot, but, I mean, he's raking up there. So salute to him, man. Mm-hmm. For what he's able to accomplish. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, I believe he's competing in the home run derby. You know, I'm not about the jinx and this, that, and the third, but typically, you know, players who compete in the home run derby on the second half, they don't swing the bat and, you know, hit home runs like they did prior to. So I'm just curious to see what he does with them, man. It's fun to watch. But also, a name that I don't think I heard you guys mention, who I honestly enjoy playing, you know, in this day and age, is Mookie Betts. This guy here, I hated watching him play when he was a member of the Boston Red Sox. He went over to the Dodgers. And, you know, watching him play over the past couple years in that L.A. Blue has been something fun to watch. We all saw his talents and his skills on display last year in the Fall Classic. Everybody else who you guys name, you know, I'm not going to reiterate that, but just kind of thinking outside the box there, Mookie Betts comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a little bit of a down year. I think the Dodgers in general are kind of, you know, still having that little hangover from last year's title. I think their pitcher just went down with an injury, inflammation in his elbow. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough being, you know, out there in La La Land in L.A. But, he is a good player. And to your point, yeah, I mean, I used to watch him, you know, kind of terrorize my Yankees a little bit. But, it's another good player. But, listen, I could talk baseball all day. There's a lot of stuff to cook on. You know, TP, I don't know where you want to take it. If you want to, I did have that NCAA article. I did want to touch on. I don't know if you want to touch on that real quick, and then we get into the NBA finals. You let me know.
Yeah, I thought you was at the grill. Okay, no problem. I mean, if you want to start the NCAA, we can. Because I mean, the school that you're talking about.
Let's do
it. We got. I want to talk a little. I mean, you got some gangster dudes that you know so well. I mean, if you want to talk about them, you can. We set it off then, if you want to.
it's an interesting article. This is kind of what I was alluding to last week. We talked about the NCAA kind of allowing players to make money off their name, their likeness, et cetera. So it's the owner of a Florida mixed martial arts gyms, so he kind of is an investor, but, you know, Dan Lambert, he's putting a plan together to have a $500 a month endorsement deal for every Miami Hurricanes football player that's on a scholarship. make note of that. So, I mean, and it could be up to 90 players. So, they, you know, to get a monthly payment, it could be almost a half a billion dollars that he could pump. Well, not a half a million dollars that he could pump in to, you know, Miami football players. So, I mean, just kind of want to get a read on the room. This is kind of what I was talking about. Like, these big schools can now get these kind of legal, you know, what we can say, boosters that, you know, can offer incentives for these guys to go to their – to play for their schools. Like, hey, if you come to Miami, there's an instant check for you right here. And then, you know, the sky's the limit, as opposed to a smaller school that probably can't offer that kind of deal to their scholarship players. So, I mean, TP, this is your football team to you. I definitely want to get your opinion on the news that broke today. And there's some other there's definitely some other news that, you know, there's other ways that players are starting to, you know, fill the pipeline and starting to make some, you know, make some money for themselves in college. So, I mean, this is the floodgates that we were talking about. I don't know if you saw it, but, I mean, I'd love to get your opinion on what's going on in Miami.
Well, the first two players that got signed were Bubba Bolden and De'Aaron King, both of these guys getting $20,000 being college athletes. And not knowing the severity of all of the money that's being turned towards Miami right now, but it's interesting that this is the school that they're focusing on so much, while you know me for a good portion of my life, Barry, that I'm the diehard Hurricane fan here, and I can remember close to the tail end of the 90s while the Hurricanes were serving that probational period because all of the questions that were, you know, forming around the organization or the university. And then next thing you know, 2000 turned around, and then Butch Davis got all those kids to come there, and, you know, Butch ended up leaving, and then Larry Cougar got the show, and we had the best college team ever. And then, you know, everybody knows how Shapiro came down there and all of that scandal and the boost and so on and so forth. Now it's like a free market, and everything is Miami, Miami now. It's like, okay, so now we're back in order. So it's like, I like the direction that sports are going. These kids are being recognized and acknowledged, and, you know, rightfully so. But it's like the year that we had to suffer and things of that nature. So I like it. I want to know the breakdown of how everything's going to go. And I don't know the totality of the numbers, but I guess us first, because so many people do watch us on a Saturday basis, like we're in the line of, like, us and SEC football along the lines of, like, Florida, Alabama, trying to think quickly, LSU, you know, schools of that nature. So I want to see how many chips start falling, because we are, let's just say, 3 weeks from August. I want to say, like, the second to last week of August is when some of those games will be played. So I think they're going to have a quick turnaround to see how they start addressing these players and coaches and things alike. And it could be pretty interesting on how the season will be played out and how much more these athletes will start playing harder on the field. College football will be interesting, but I think there might be a death upon, like, college basketball because of so many things opening up for the basketball athletes. So college football may be way more entertaining. I feel bad when November comes around. College basketball will probably start to take a fall in, like, the next 2 to 4 years, at least if I'm looking at it correctly. But just to see that this is that day and age that we're lucky to see this type of situation happen in college football, college sports, I just wish it was there when we were in college. You know what I'm saying? Because then it would have gave us more of an incentive to try and play college sports wherever we were. You know what I'm saying? So congratulations to the student athlete of today.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, college basketball has to compete with the G League because they're offering kids contracts and kids are going straight from high school to the G League because they can get money there. It's like, why am I going to go to college for a year and not get what I want? Might as well go get a little bit of money and then I can go pro. And, you know, so that's the route they're going. So now, you know, it's a necessity for these kids to start collecting money. I mean, Dan Lambert is offering these kids, you know, a payment of $500 a month to advertise his gyms on social media. I mean, all you got to do is retweet or repost or share or like or whatever, and you get a check. You know what I mean? So, I mean, this is what's going to come, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger from here. Serious, I don't know if you heard about this news, you know, with the owner of American Top Team mixed martial arts gym offering Miami football players $500 a month to advertise his gyms. I don't know if you heard about it. Do you like it? What are the implications? And just give me your overall opinion on it.
You know, man, I'm really going to, you know, fall back on what I said last week about the situation. You know, I am all for the collegiate athlete, you know, making a making a dollar off of his or her name, however, by every means necessary. You know, and if you're fortunate enough or unfortunate enough, depending upon how you look at it, to play ball in Miami, you know, this is part of the perks that come with that. You know, you may not compete for a championship as opposed to going to, you know, maybe a Nick Saban team, whatever the case may be, but, you know, your pockets would be fatter or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I look at it like this. I'm not really seeing the grass is greener or, you know, slippery slope, so to speak, because at the end of the day, these athletes are getting offers to go to these schools based off of what they've done on the field. So at the end of the day, if you are good enough to get recruited to Miami, if you're good enough to get recruited to LSU, if you're good enough to get recruited to fill in that blank, then, you know, it may be an extra perk for you to go to Miami, you know, but at the end of the day, you got to strap up, go on the field and play ball. You know what I'm saying? Just because you are, just because you put on that stupid ass Miami helmet doesn't mean automatically, you know, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. You got to go out there and play ball, you know, and if your play doesn't match, you know, what you're getting, there's negative ramifications behind that, as opposed to if you go out there, you ball out, you can maximize on top of what you're already getting. So, I'm all for it. This is all on the players to, you know, use their platform, use their social media, use, you know, their connections or whatever the case may be to make as much bread as you want. And again, if you go to Miami and this guy is like, yo, all you gotta do is you post my gym and I'm gonna slide you 500, you know, so be it. That doesn't mean, you know, you're a bomb athlete and you're gonna get drafted into the league and this, that, and the third. You still gotta put in that work at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you put in the work, you'll get more money. And I think that's kind of, to PvP's point and to your point, it incentivizes you to work a little bit harder. I mean, this is just a flat check that you can get for, you know, sharing a post or, you know, just retweeting or whatever about a gym. But then more deals will come, like the $20,000 deal, if your play backs up what you're doing. So, yeah, I love it. I mean, Steve, what's your opinion on everything that's going on with the NCAA endorsements, with Miami, you know, possibly getting this deal to endorse a gym for $500 a month?
Well, the NCAA is going up in flames. I hate the NCAA. My God, I wish. That's what this means, actually, is the NCAA is, to call them a governing body would indicate an organization and a professionalism. They are anything but. I'm so thrilled for the athletes. I'm thrilled for the fact that capitalism is all-inclusive. Everyone should be able to do it. And now these athletes can do it, as far as what Dan Lambert is doing with top team. Fine by me. I think what's going to be important is that you can make $500 a month. That's all very well and good, but it's important to learn how to manage it. This is where the evolution of the educational system is an absolute necessity, like food, and that the classes that are offered, especially at high school and college, have got to show people the facts of life, of living life here in the States. That would allow them to make money, manage the money, use it in the right way, and, you know, capitalize on their talent and what they're able to do. As I've always said, well, you've never heard me say this, but I was just saying that if you can go get paid, go get paid, and then continue to get paid and hold on to the money for as long as you can. So I think it's going to be important that the educational system catches up to this. The NCAA won't be able to stand in the way of that, which is great news because, again, I hate the NCAA, but I love this for the athletes in terms of their ability to participate in this capitalistic system that all of us get to participate in because that's what Americans do. and I think it's wonderful. But the best part about it for me is that the NCAA is going up in flames. Mark Emmerts? If I could get in front of Mark Emmert right now, I would literally do a tap dance on his head, and I would lecture him for the next 20 years of his life on common sense. I'm just so thrilled that the NCAA now has to adjust or just go away altogether, which I think is more likely to happen than they adjust it.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's a fan of the institution that's called the NCAA, but, I mean, the sports, the kids do a great job. They're entertaining. They're blameless, more or less. I actually got a question because of this. So because of the rule change to let these kids, make money off their likeness and what have you, now there's been calls for, like, Michigan to have their Final Four banners restored because of the Chris Webber situation, looking to get his Heisman Trophy back that was taken away from him because of the scandal that happened at USC and him taking money or what have you. I mean, TP, I'm going to come right to you, brother. I mean, what is your opinion on, Michigan restoring the banners, Bush getting his award back? Should that happen? Should they basically, because the rules change, should they get, the banners restored and their Heisman Trophy back for what they did at college or allegedly did?
Now, this is where things get interesting. The cookout may get very lit. The charcoal will get very orange out here. I'm going to love this. The Michigan situation, that was when we were younger, you know what I'm saying? Like high school, middle school days, you know what I'm saying? Like everybody got the baggy shorts, the black socks, and then it's like all for now. That's supposed to be forgotten history, but everybody remembers the Fab Five and the Super Softs and remembering how they went up against Christian Laettner and them and losing in that Final Four or the national championship, excuse me. And then everybody remembers the timeout and how everything broke up between Chris Webber and Michigan and how Jalen Rose and Chris Webber haven't talked to each other for over a decade and trying to rekindle that, and they still have a little beef going on. So, like, yes, Michigan should get their situation back because everything revolves around money. I can't believe that this is what the world has turned into, a materialistic situation. And then the Reggie Bush situation. I am a diehard Hurricane fan, which you all know, right? But that had to be one of the more epic football seasons that I have ever seen in my life. And for somebody to steal it from him, or somebody approaching his mother or family outside of what he may have been aware of or may not have been aware of, it's like, come on. Nobody has played football like that in quite some time, maybe to a Barry Sanders type of season, but I'm winking at the same time. But I really mean that. The way that Reggie Bush was going off, Lindell White was in that backfield, and Reggie was going off so crazy that nobody really remembered Lindell White was back there. And it's like, okay, so you guys giving his mother a gift takes away from what the heck this dude did in a college football season. It's like, come on. I understand it. Or looking at Dez Bryant's situation. Dez Bryant went to lunch with Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders picked him up. They go get a lunch, and you kicked him out of college football for eating a meal because he ate a meal with a super megastar legend icon. Like, it was a meal. I don't care if he ate prime rib or lobster. Like, He ate food. Like, stop. Okay, so this is where I laugh at the NCAA and I feel some type of way, and this is the black eye they took because they try to line their pockets and make themselves look good in the limelight where karma does not play. I try my best to not talk as much junk as I do back and forth with me or Barry or me or Aaron or A.K.A. Simmons series because it's like I know it'll come back, and look at the karma that came back to the NCAA because they're foolish for the stuff that they did in the past, and now it's coming back to them right here and now. So I really want to see these people, like, get their situation back so they could, like, not live in the shadows, like looking at Chris Webber and Chris Webber hiding from a lot of the media. You don't even hear Chris Webber talk to people outside of, like, TNT or whatever network he may be speaking on. Other than that, you don't see Chris Webber. Chris Webber's a legend in the NBA or a legend in college basketball. And doesn't speak. Reggie Bush, like, only time he speaks is when he's on TV, like, whether it's college football. Other than that, you don't hear Reggie Bush talk. Reggie Bush had one of the best seasons we've ever seen. Like, no, don't have these people sitting in the background because it's convenient for you. No, these guys are legendary in what they did, and it, I guess to be acknowledged at this point in time where they couldn't enjoy it at their right point in time, if I'm saying that correctly. So I'm laughing at the NCAA on how this has actually been put to the forefront to make everybody be held accountable and take care of people across the line. So I love it at this point in time.
I mean,
can I interpret that thing?
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it. It's free for all. Go for it.
Appreciate it. To TP's point, the NCAA is a nonprofit, but they've been profiting off of athletes for years, and they've had a way of moving the money around to where, you know, the American – or maybe America doesn't want to catch up to them because they're making that much money. Lord knows the government wants to get their hands on it, or there's probably – a little bit of collusion with the government and the NCAA. I suspect, I can't prove it, but I suspect that's there. So when you're a nonprofit making as much money as you are, and you call yourself a governing body, you're going to operate as the government does, and that is to maximize revenue while limiting liability. And that's exactly what they've done. The problem is that in the case of Reggie Bush, in the case of Terrell Pryor at Ohio State, in all these particular cases, they went, and the reason why, you know, USC was, they stuck in USC like they did, wasn't so much Reggie Bush, was more about Mike Gehr and the program overall. As a UCLA fan, I know that USC is very, very arrogant, but the NCAA can't issue a punishment that is worse for USC, but you might recall what happened with Penn State and Jerry Sandusky. What was the deal with that? Where was the outcry with that? It was more of about a personal thing with the NCAA and USC. So they went too far. And so between the mistake of making a whole lot of profits as a nonprofit and being very political and selective as to how they were going to meet out their punishment and how much, and the ridiculous notion that athletes cannot be taken to dinner or can't be given a suit to go to a wedding, wherever the case would be, I mean, that is beyond petty. But when you're a nonprofit making a lot of profit, you want to hide that. And by doing so, that makes the NCAA no more ethical than the various universities and institutions that they were nailing, and doing so in a way that it had to make you scratch your head. So TP is right. It's karma coming back on them. If you don't do, you know, the system is, a lot of people feel like the system, you could hide in this, you could hide behind the system. You really can't. The system is designed to catch you eventually, and the NCAA has been caught.
I mean, I agree. I mean, serious, I'd love to get your opinion on it. I mean, what should happen with you know, Miami, not Miami, Michigan's banners from a Final Four, mm-hmm. you know, a great run that they had. I mean, we were kids, but we loved it. The Fab Five.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're talking Reggie Bush's epic season, his Heisman Trophy season. What should happen with those and other awards that, you know, were stripped because of NCAA rules?
I vote reinstatement.
Only benefited the – yeah. Okay, great. I mean, rules that benefited only the NCAA.
You cannot erase history as if it never occurred. You know, the
exactly.
NCAA is stupid. I mean, literally – oh, this didn't happen. No, it did. Okay? Eyes, ears, nose, throat. You know, why don't you just tell me the 2 + 2 = 5? I swear to God, there's only one logic in the world, and it belongs to the universe. And the NCAA thinks it could supersede that. To hell with them.
Okay, so
exactly.
here's my take, and it's going to be extremely controversial. And if you thought that the charcoal was going to get lit before, here it goes now. I don't think anything should be done. And here's why. All right. We live in a society where now, walk with my analogy for a second. Marijuana is now legal in several states. Okay. And we do not currently see the jails open, letting people out of jail for weed possessions. We don't see POs, you know, getting dropped for weed possessions because why? When they were initially booked and caught, it was illegal to do whatever these cats did. Now, with that being said, I'm all for you know, Reggie Bush, you know, getting his stuff back. But to sit up here and say that that should happen, you miss me with that, because you can only go all, you can only govern based off of the rules and regulations that are set before you when the crime or the infraction has been committed. And unfortunately, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, you know what I'm saying, what took place, and you know, with Reggie Bush, what took place with the Fab Five, what took place with Deion Sanders and Dez Bryant and several others violated the letter of the law. Now, we could sit here and say, is that law wrong? And you're not going to get no argument from me about that. Or we could sit here and say, is it stupid, this, that, and the third? Again, you're not going to get no argument with me about that. But to now go backwards and admit fault, which, again, we all know that the NCAA is not going to do, and award them their trophy or award them their Heisman Trophy or award them, you know, whatever they got taken away, I don't know if they can or should even go about doing that, because they were they were ruling based off of the governing entities that they had at the time.
I mean, so okay. I have – go ahead, Chris.
No, I mean, so that's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, I mean, I get where TP's coming from. I mean, I get where Steve is coming from. You know what I'm saying? I'm a big Reggie Bush fan. Like, what that brother did, you know, I'm with all that. But, again, based off of the rules and the regulations that were in place at the time, the NCAA unfortunately did – what was in the bylaws for them to do.
And this is the thing, and I agree with you, but I'm going to counter your point based off of this, right? Okay. Anybody know what the Reconstruction Act of 1867 was? And if you don't know what it is, basically it was
please,
to bring
just
the...
Because I want to respond to him. I just want you to finish so
okay.
I can like...
Okay. Okay.
Respond to what he's saying. Right. That's out of line.
No worries. So the Reconstruction Act was basically a law that was passed to bring the rebel states from the South back into the Union after the Civil War, right? Legislation was to dictate they weren't going to get a slap on the – all they were going to get was a slap on the hand. They were just going to welcome them back with open arms if they, you know, abolished slavery and all that stuff. People up north wanted to punish them. What they wanted to do was say, hey – slavery was bad. You should be punished to the full extent. Everybody that did it, you know, either what have you, go to jail, whatever, pay fines, blah, blah, blah. No, they decided to be lenient, let him back in, no harm, no foul. What happened after that? Jim Crow laws, okay? And then you had another 100 years before the Civil Rights Act, right? Okay. So basically by being lenient on them, nothing happened, right? Nothing happened to the South. And they were allowed to perpetuate whatever they did in a different fashion, right? So that's why I'm thinking we need to go after these guys and say, no, Chris Webber deserves to be apologized to. He deserves to get those banners restored. Reggie Bush deserves to get that Heisman Trophy. Even though what they did was against the rules at the time, we need to say that the NCAA was full of crap at that time. Your rules were unfair to everybody but yourself. So we're going to punish you for what you did. And we're not going to punish the players because they took a lunch, like TP said, with Deion Sanders. No, we're going to punish you for making it illegal that lunch got them in trouble. That's where I sit on it. And even though I agree with these theories, they broke the rules at the time. No. We need to show the NCAA that you guys are full of crap and that what you did was wrong to these kids. They were kids. They were kids.
The thing is, like, I know TP wants to get in here, and, you know, I'm going to shut up and let him talk for a minute. But here's my thing. Like, I'm not negating that. Like, the way the rule was constructed, you know, and everything was a bunch of crap. You know what I'm saying? The way they treated these kids, the way I get that. But once again, like, for the NCAA to say, I'm sorry to Chris Webber, for the NCAA to say, my bad, Reggie, we were wrong, you know, again, it is what it is. But to give them the awards on, like, some my bad, like, you know, I just don't think that that's how it's going to play out. And I don't think that they should have to give the awards that or anything like that. because once again, like, we all, you know, I mean, again, I'm not going to get so socially justice, but, like, I'm still waiting for my reparations check. You feel me? Like,
are we all?
Waiting for that, you know what I'm saying? So,
are we all?
You know what I'm saying? And you know, even though, you know, everybody's like, you know, what happened back then was jacked up and we're still fighting that type of battle today, you know what I'm saying? And we made a long way. We're coming a long way, this, that, and the third. But, you know, this is it. This is the world we live in. You know, now from here on out, you can do better and, you know, progress forward. And, you know, we all see that, you know, the NCAA, you know, is trying to, you know, make amends and, you know, now allowing players to make money off, you know, their likeness and this, that, and the third. But, you know, for them to go back and undo several years of crap, I just don't see that happening.
We'll see. TP, go for it.
I mean, Barry, you hit it dead on the head, so I really don't have to analyze too much into it because now Sirius see the light, and he's even saying what I'm about to say to him. Dr. Dre made a song back in 2000 that said, what's the difference between me and you? What's the difference? If you're looking for a reparation check, it's the same thing that these guys are going through. You mean to tell me that you being Aaron Simmons and you having a wife named Jessica Simmons, but Malik is out there tearing the country up playing football, and he may or may not know what you two are up to, and was playing football at a clip that nobody's ever seen, and you two greedy behinds were doing whatever you were doing behind Malik's back and cost him his trophy that he doesn't get it back?
I mean, honestly.
No,
I mean,
yes or no, because I'm not done. I'm not done. Yes or no?
I mean, two
being greedy, taken away from your son right now. This dude.
Are we talking about now?
At that point in time, I don't care how it went down. What you two were responsible to be held accountable of to mess your sons up, and this is what the NCAA did. Whether he knew about this or not, which I feel like he didn't, because I feel like his father was taking control of that, because you know how fathers do. That he gets it taken away from him. And it's all because of them trying to line their pockets up because he's playing in Southern Cal where it's a whole bunch of money? Yes or no?
I mean, I see your point, but no, not really.
Oh, no, yes or no, because I'm not done. I'm not done with you. You stay right there in that chair. You stay in that chair. So it wouldn't be right if it happened to you, but you're looking for a reparation check for some stuff that happened back in the day that you wasn't alive for. How are you going to do that and say that? And that's happening to your son right now, and Malik got a 2,000-yard season on some epic stuff that we've never seen in our lives. Like, come on, don't try to play good cop, bad cop. You know what's wrong and what's right, bro. That ain't right. But look,
I'll let you talk.
Look, here go the crazy part. That Bryant was playing good football, and Deion came down and recognized that, took that boy out to eat, and they stopped it? And said, you can't play football no more. You got to go in there and hopefully off the talent that they've already seen that you could try to progressively get into the league. Thank God the Dallas Cowboys picked him up and he could do what he could do with the Cowboys. You robbed that kid. You robbed him. This is because of some bullcrap that y'all had out there. Like Dez knew that was going to cost him. If Dez knew that a meal was going to cost him the rest of his college season, you think Dez would have went to – and that's a lifetime. All of us would have went to lunch, dinner, breakfast. We'd have ate cereal with Deion. If Deion bought a box of Captain Crunch, we'd have sat down and ate a box of Captain Crunch with Deion. That $3 box of Captain Crunch with milk would have probably cost him because he ate lunch with Deion. Deion paid for a box of Captain Crunch at your local supermarket. That's absolutely ridiculous.
I feel you.
That's ridiculous.
I feel you.
So I get you.
So how could he not be rightfully
justified for something that he wasn't aware of? How would he think a meal is going to be a problem?
Again, I'm not negating that the rule was jacked up, TP. I was never negating that. I'm not even saying that they don't owe them an apology. I'm not saying that at all. But, again, my whole point is this. They were literally acting within the confines of the dumbass rules that they had in place to begin with. I'm not negating that they owe them an apology. I'm not negating that they need to sit down and videotape them having Captain Crunch. I'm not negating that at all. Because, again, I'm with you. The rule was effed up. From the rut, I was never negating that.
So, okay, that rule. So what about Malik? If Malik was running the ball for USC and they gave you and Jessica a house in D.C., Georgetown area.
Y'all got
one of them brownstones.
Yeah.
And Malik came back home and was like, Dad, you moved the crib. Where my stuff at? You like, son, come on, I got something to show you. And then Malik like, you only live here? He's like, yeah. When you come over Thanksgiving, I got you. He's like, stop, man, you got a car. Whoa, like, you know what I'm saying? Malik going crazy. Because he knows 4 years later he in the league running the ball for the Saints. And they like, yo, we found some faulty stuff that your pops was up to. Malik like, what? What happened? Like, yeah, we got to take that trophy from you, too, because you two were being greedy behind his back.
Again, I saw you. But, see, at the end of the day, like, again, the onus is to be on the parents. At that point, to understand what the hell's going on. Like, again, the fact that it's that from Reggie is jacked up to Reggie. You know what I'm saying? The fact that, you know, their parents or whomever got involved with that situation with the Reggie Bush thing or whatever knew the rules and regulations and put their son in that position, that's bad parenting if you ask me.
No, but do you think they knew the rules? They didn't know the rules.
This has been the rule in college sports from the beginning of time.
I know they probably were there, but you know that their parents did not read the rule book. Come on, let's be real.
I'm sure they did, but
that's
okay.
There we go. Now we're there.
If me and Jess put my son Malik in that position. You know what I'm saying? And he gets in trouble and he loses his Heisman Trophy. I got to look in the mirror and be like, yo, I effed up that for my child. I got to look in the mirror. I got to live with that every day. You know what I'm saying? Mr. and Mrs. Bush
but
are
we,
looking
but
themselves
we all,
in the
but
mirror
you know what it,
and be like,
but you
I mean,
know
again,
it is
the rule is fucked
serious,
up. The rule is jacked up.
It is. But the fact is what TP said is right. Like, or and Steve, too, just because you took it away don't mean it didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, you took the award away. Great. We all know who the Heisman Trophy winner was that year. We all know that Michigan went to the Final Four 2 years in a row. You know what I mean? You can't take that away. You can't strike it from our memory just because you took the banners away. You know what I mean? So, from that perspective, I say, hey, you know, give it back, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's corny at this point. Like, you know, you take it away because, you know, maybe, why? Because they didn't invite you to the lunch, too? Dad was supposed to invite some clown from the NCAA office and get him lunch, too? If he was there, would they have gotten in trouble? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they
had
Captain Crunch
and Fruity Pebbles. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like we got 100% of the pot. And if, you know, 1% of it falls off and the players get it, no, that's it. No. It's control. It's a system of control to control these players.
It's fear.
And to,
it's fear. It's living in lack of fear. It's not living
exactly.
in abundance. There's enough for everybody, ladies and gentlemen. There's enough for everybody. If you are in the lane that leads you to it, you can get to it. So this fear and lack thing has got to go by the wayside like the NCAA because they're going up in flames. I'm telling you.
Poof.
Speaking of poof.
What did you say? What did Jigga say? TP, poof, vamoose, son of a bitch, right? So, you know, that's it. We're gone. That's, you know? So,
speaking of a
you know,
it's as though V to the insane.
You know, listen, I listened to that album a week ago.
Song? I'm a hustler, baby. Well, now these kids can hustle without the NCAA getting in their way. So.
Exactly. I'm a hustler, homie. You know, like, listen, the Blueprint still sounds really good after all this time. Like, it's almost 20 years. It still sounds good. But shout out to Hope. Listen, you know, we did an album. We're doing great.
My favorite album.
You know how that song starts, right?
Ladies and gentlemen.
No, not that part. Not that part.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Blow it a tree. Oh, it's timeless.
Exactly, man. It's great, man. It still sounds good. I remember it's 9/11. Yeah, exactly.
But
we got
to dribble down in VA. It's her from the home of the chair.
Listen,
with them. Plus, if they were so, let me stop, man. Y'all got me talking.
I still remember the BET Awards that he just dropped the first verse on that song. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know, listen. Call number 929-477-2759 to call this cookout. You're here with the villain, the hero, Sirius, and the hot taker himself, Steve, going through this double A. let's move on. It's a great debate. I love it. We could talk about it all day, but I definitely want to get into the NBA Finals. Game one popped off last night. I'm used to game one usually being on a Wednesday, but they popped it off on a Tuesday. Giannis came back off the knee injury, said he felt good, put in 20 points, 17 rebounds, had a nice chase down block, reminiscent of LeBron James. Had a solid game, but you know what? Too much Suns and too much Bullenhauser, in my opinion. The Suns ran away with this game. Ayton had what? It felt like 100 boards. Devin Booker put in work. Chris Paul, 31, 9 assists, 4 rebounds. I don't even remember what was Ayton's stat. I think it was 20 points, 17 rebounds, something like that. Some ridiculous. I mean, you know, they have a legit big three in Phoenix, but game one goes to the Suns to see if the Bucks can even it up. So I'll come to you first, TP, the hero himself. Can you break down game one a little bit for me, and what do the Bucks need to do to even this series?
Pray.
is that a Jay-Z song too?
That's
off American Gangster. We're talking now. We're going American Gangster.
Listen, hold on. Shout out to my mom, Janet Powell, man. If my mother was to crack a joke like that, if it was a bad situation, my mom is a Minnesota Vikings fan, and if the Vikings are beating up on somebody, it'd be like, yo, how they gonna get back in the game? My mother be like, pray.
When we get to covering certain NFL teams, when we get to that part of the show, whenever we do it, when we ask the question, what could you expect from a certain team this year? And my answer might be that exact answer, pray.
I'm literally all I'm thinking about.
MLS, by the way, with Urban Meyer in charge over there, pray.
Exactly.
We'll get to that. Sorry.
Just pray. But you gotta say it like practically. You gotta say it like practical. It gotta be like a flair to it. Like anybody you say it, it's good. You know what I'm saying? But like I'm looking at it like this, right? I'm not gonna lie, and I've been saying this for like the past 2 or 3 weeks. I've been a Chris Paul guy since he came out of high school for grandfather's eye. Everybody knows the story, the 61-point game, threw the ball out of bounds. And this is his time to shine, right? And now this is his time to shine, and we've seen it. I don't see, like, Drew Holiday and the guard core, like, stopping what him and Booker can do. Booker's fresh legs and a shooter that was in front of the late, great Kobe Bryant. And every time he looks at his shooting hand forearm, that joint says, be legendary, and Kobe Bryant's signature. These dudes have a chip on their shoulders. Chris Paul has a chip to be a part of NBA legendary situations, and Devin Booker is trying to be one of the better shooting guards that we've seen in NBA history. I'm not saying that he's there yet, but this is a storybook story if he can make it happen.
Got that potential.
The inconsistency of Chris Middleton is where I worry, but he actually has been trying to do the best that he can. You know what I'm saying? But you got people in that roster that have to show up, like P.J. Tucker has to show up, and as much as I pick on Brook Lopez, they need him as much as possible. For you to be the tallest guy out there on the floor and not make it difficult every possession, and you bail them out, even though you hit the three here and there, I give you the credit. That is a shot that you like. You still are a problem down there in the paint when you turn over either shoulder. You're taller than Ayton to make it a problematic situation or to get him in foul trouble, and you bail them out on what you guys do. So I understand that Giannis is your MVP. Giannis is your defensive player of the year. This guy has a hyperextended knee that you guys have to keep him off his leg as much as possible. You guys soaked up as much as $200+ million into this guy. That is a future investment. Even though I know the championship is in front of you now, you guys have to think about the future because you've invested so much into this guy. So everybody has to try to step up and pull their weight and not put all of it on Giannis. I get it. Giannis is the name or the face of the team right now, but he needs help before you guys try to get him to exert himself to put up 34 points because it's doable, even though I don't feel like he's at that, you know, health clip to do it, for 34 points and like 14, 16 rebounds to help you guys win a game. Be fair to him because he's helped carry you guys here. Even though you guys have won those two games up against the Hawks, but the Hawks had injuries that suffered for them to succumb to losing in the Eastern Conference Finals. So help him because he's helped carry you guys this far. So like I said, pray, because they have X factors on that Suns team that is helping them do it. If anybody on that team, on the Suns team, ends up stepping up and hitting more shots, whether it's Jay Crowder or Mikal Bridges, they're in trouble. They had a poor shooting night from Devin Booker, and he still looked feasible on the floor. He was not hitting threes, and that's one of his specialties, low-key. Like, so if he hit another two or three threes, that score would have been ridiculous. Like, people would have already mailed the score in and might not, well, not even come to any arena and see how the Suns are killing these guys. So I get it. Like I said, pray.
Prayer changes things. I don't know if it's going to change this one, though.
Hallelujah.
Serious, I'll let you take the pulpit. Yeah, I'll let you take the pulpit from TP, and then we'll raise a collection offering afterwards. Pass the plate around.
Yeah, no.
Serious, go ahead. Talk to me about game one and if the like, should make adjustments.
Is this the portion where we tithe our way through this series?
Like, yeah, we got to put it all off with it.
Yeah, I know my body, man. I'm a preacher's kid. This is what I do.
And I open the doors of the church. Open the doors of the church.
You know what I'm saying? With that being said, man, this series is I don't want to say it's over, but
not over.
Unless Budenholzer figures out how to stop simple pick-and-roll basketball, like, first and foremost, I don't understand why in the world you thought it would be a good idea to have Brook Lopez, whatever the sixth man is, Bobby Portis, whatever, matched up on Chris Paul, ISO 101 off of pick-and-roll. That's barbecue chicken all day, twice on Sunday. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I honestly thought, in my honest opinion, that if the Suns were going to win this game or win this series, CP3 was going to literally carry them to do it. And game one, again, Devin Booker had a subpar, you know, ho-hum 20 points. You know, Ayton had 18 and I think it was 20 and 18 ho-hum. But if you're going to continually switch off Brook Lopez on the CP3, he's cooking that cat. If you're going to consistently switch off, you know, Bobby Portis on the CP3, he's cooking that cat. Honestly, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. I don't think anybody matched up on CP3 one-on-one is a good matchup. Jrue Holiday, I don't think he can do it. Chris Middleton, he can't do it. So, honestly, in my opinion, you have to figure out some other defensive formation, whether you want to play a zone, you know what I'm saying, although you can screen and roll a zone. Again, basic basketball. This is old school Popovich, screen roll, which you used to see with Tim Duncan and Dave Robinson. It's funny that particular play, you know what I'm saying, has come back up. And it's going to be the play that the Suns ride to a championship. Because I don't care if Giannis is on the floor or not. I said this in the barbershop, and I've said this here. I've said this talking to other friends. The Milwaukee Bucks plays better without Giannis on the floor because they are more spread out, and you don't key in on one particular guy. I was one that actually picked the Atlanta Hawks to win that series once Giannis went down. And they didn't lose a damn game afterwards because the floor was spread and, you know, people were able to move around and they got contributions from other people. Giannis being on the floor clouds up the middle of the paint, not to mention his horrific free throw shooting. So he's a liability in crunch time. You know what I'm saying? DeAndre Ayton can make his free throws. The Phoenix Suns have cats who are on the floor that make their free throws. So at the end of the day, who are you going to foul? Who are you going to – like, there's matchup problems all over the floor. P.J. Tucker, I love the cat. Dude can't make a layup. Jrue Holiday, you know, goes off of 30-some-odd points in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, and I don't think he's cracked 15 points since. You know what I'm saying? Like, the helter-skelter, you know, here today, gone tomorrow type of mentality that the Milwaukee Bucks play with is not going to be conducive to them winning the series, especially when you got a dog in CP3 that is like, yo, we ain't losing this effing – we're not losing the series. I don't care if I have to do it myself. We're not losing the series. Unless I get hurt, God forbid, knock on wood, we're not losing the series. I think the series is over.
So not even a prayer. We're not even going to hold up a collection plate for like a benevolent offering.
You know what? I mean, funerals are expensive, you know what I'm saying? And you got to pray the preacher. So go ahead and take that, you know, benevolence offering and go ahead and give it to the preacher because it's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
Turn
like
out
Reynolds.
The light. Light a candle.
Oh wow, he went way back. Turn him off, Steve.
Teddy P.
He'll tell you. Turn it off, Steve. I'd love to get your analysis on Game One and what's going on with the Bucks and if the Suns are really gonna just take this series away.
Well, I'm gonna put it. I'm gonna go kind of good news, bad news here. The good news is, I don't think Milwaukee should panic after game one. And I feel that way for a couple of reasons. One, Phoenix had six players score in double figures. They had 20 points off the bench by Cameron Payne and Cam Johnson, the Cameron Twins as they were. 22-22 bench scoring between the two teams, but Cam Johnson and Cameron Payne contributed to six Phoenix Suns scoring in double figures, but the bench points were the same. I thought Chris Middleton played as well as he could, and he did a good job on Devin Booker. Chris Middleton shot the ball better from his two-guard spot than Booker did. Booker was basically a volume shooter. The problem is, and so I think Milwaukee can make adjustments. I think going to a zone might be a good idea, or have Jrue Holiday focus on guarding CP3, because he's the type of defender that can bother CP3. He's big, he's physical, as a point guard. He can make it tough on CP3, who's the biggest point guard in the world. Chris Paul is basically doing whatever they want, so there is an adjustment they can make on the pick and roll. But make sure Jrue Holiday is going over the top and making things very hard on CP3 and maybe turn him into a volume shooter, because with a Chris Paul-led team, his strength, he could shoot it, of course, but his strength is getting other people involved. And clearly other people were involved, as again, six Suns were in double figures. Chris Paul with 9 assists, but I would turn him into a volume shooter. He shot the ball 19 times. If you could get him above 20 and he's shooting more than he's getting other people involved, that could work against the Suns. So if Chris Paul is determined that he's going to take over these games, Milwaukee should use it against him and make sure that he can't get other players involved to where Phoenix has that kind of offensive productivity and turn him into a volume shooter to where maybe he shoots more than Devin Booker. That is not what you want if you're the Suns and if you're Monty Williams. Jrue Holiday has to give you more. He was 4-14 from the field. He was 0-4 from 3. You've got to get more offensive production. He's one of your three best players. I thought Giannis played really, really well. I was surprised he was that effective. Coming from a hyperextended knee, having some time off, probably a little bit rusty, I thought he played really, really well. I was actually surprised by how well he played in this game. So I think that's a good sign. Milwaukee has got to cut back the free throw disparity, and Mike Budenholzer was complaining about the free throw disparity. Phoenix was the aggressor last night. That's how you get more free throws. You have got to be aggressive if you're Milwaukee, especially playing on the road, because that is going to make the officials make calls for you. But when you get those free throws, you've got to hit them. 9 of 16 for Milwaukee, 25 of 26 for Phoenix. There's a difference in the game right there. But the fact that Milwaukee only lost by 13, considering Phoenix dominated in most major categories offensively, I think is a good sign. So if they can adjust, you know, on the pick and roll against Chris Paul, turn Chris Paul into a volume shooter, get to the free throw line more often and shoot free throws, you know, with more efficiency than they did in game one, I could see them taking game two. I don't think it's a sweep. I know a lot of people are predicting that, but I don't think it's a sweep. I think Milwaukee can adjust defensively and they can make it a more competitive game. I will admit on the barbershop, I told TP on the clubhouse barbershop chat room that I thought Milwaukee had to have a good showing in game one because they don't have the luxury of having a fill it out game because of Giannis's condition. But Giannis came back and they lost by 13. I thought they would, I didn't think they were going to win, but I thought the game would be a little bit closer than that. That said, I thought maybe Phoenix could have won by more considering how they dominated most of the major offensive categories. So it's not a lost series as of yet. And if anything has taught us in these NBA playoffs, you cannot make sweeping statements after a game. The NBA playoff, this NBA playoffs more than any other that I've seen a lot of them, are as unpredictable as they've ever been. So if saying the season, a series is over, then you better make sure you understand that it takes four wins to win a series and not one. I'm not going there. That's what these NBA playoffs have taught me, that you cannot project the series from one game. And I'm not doing that in this case. I think Milwaukee can make adjustments. I think they can be more competitive. But I also think Phoenix should not rest on their laurels after game one because I thought they could have dominated more than they did ultimately. Milwaukee still had a chance, so I'd look for game two to be a more competitive game, and we will see what happens with that. If Milwaukee can make those adjustments and, you know, Phoenix maybe cools down a little bit from a game one performance that was really, really good. But I'm not sure they can sustain that level for the rest of the series. If Milwaukee makes the adjustments and shows the kind of defense that they are normally known for, with Giannis being the anchor of that.
I agree with you. The playoffs have been unpredictable, but one thing that has been predictable is Budenholzer is getting outcoached by every coach he's going against. I'm sorry, like TP and Sirius, you guys have played basketball at a higher level than I never played organized ball. I played for fun. I played for kicks. But, I mean, the simple adjustment of not switching on a pick and roll is something you could do in-game. They didn't do it the whole game. How do you let Chris Paul come to half court, set a high pick, and you automatically adjust? And you don't adjust, I mean, and you automatically switch to have Brook Lopez on him. And then Devin Booker comes back down the court and says, let me get some of that. Gets a high pick and roll and has Brook Lopez on him. I mean, what are you doing? You have the matchup you wanted. You have either Holiday or Tucker on the ball on Chris Paul, and you switch to put Brook Lopez. It's at one point where you see Chris Paul pointing, I want you to come set the pick. Ayton, come set the pick. Why? Because Brook Lopez is guarding me. What are you doing? If it wasn't for Kevin Durant's toe, they'd be out of the playoffs. They lost by a toe, okay? If it wasn't for a toe on the three-point line, they would be home. And it's despite the fact that Budenholzer is not making adjustments that the Bucks are in the finals. That's an achievement in itself because this guy can't – he's getting out coached. This guy cannot be the coach next year. I'm sorry. He cannot be the coach. It's ridiculous. They need to make adjustments. They should have done it in-game. They didn't do it. They need to make adjustments to have Jrue Holiday guard Chris Paul. That's your guy. I said it on my blog. I wrote about the finals. I wrote a preview. I said Jrue Holiday has to guard Chris Paul. Jrue Holiday did not guard him. He switched. No. You have him, if you're up on the top of the free throw line, you have him go over the screen. If he's underneath the three-point line, you go under and you come hard and you pinch it and make sure you stay on him. You stay on him. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just coaching. And they didn't make adjustments. We're talking about Devin Booker. I think TP said it correctly. Didn't have a great game, had a good game. What happens if Booker goes off? What are they going to do then? How are they going to adjust to that? It's insane. It's insane. Milwaukee has to make adjustments. Budenholzer has to put his big boy shoes on, start making some adjustments, and saying, hey, I can't let this team beat me like this. I don't know how you come into the series and you had time to prepare And that's what you came back with, that defensive game plan. Ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's ridiculous. But, I mean, I don't know if anybody else has any opinion on it. I mean, from what I saw, if they don't make the adjustments, Milwaukee's going home in five. I said six in the blog. I'll put it to five. I'll put five games on it. I got five on it, like the Loonies, because this is ridiculous.
Yeah, Milwaukee's got to be more aggressive in game two. It's as simple as that. They have got to get to the free throw line. I mean, if you're going to win in the NBA playoffs, particularly on the road, you got to get to the free throw line. You got to make those free throws. That's when you're putting the defense back on their heels. That's when Peters can't get the transition game going. So you have a point about Budenholzer. He is not a big adjustment coach. You wonder how he's gotten to the playoffs so much or led teams to the best record in the East, Atlanta way back when, and then Milwaukee. So it's just – not a big adjustment coach, which is funny considering he came from the Greg Popovich coaching tree. So you would have thought he learned adjustments. But maybe just maybe something will kick in between game one and game two. But Milwaukee has got to be aggressive and get to the free throw line. I think that could put Phoenix on their heels, back on their heels a little bit if they could do that early in the game and take that crowd out of it, more importantly, because that was one raucous crowd over in Phoenix right now.
Well, his issue with that, you know what I'm saying, and again, I agree with you in theory that they got to get to the free throw line, but getting there doesn't get it done. You got to make the free throws once you get there. And, your most
especially
aggressive star, your most aggressive star, Giannis, I mean, he's going to get there, but he's going to shoot like four air balls and go 4 for 12 from the strike, which, you know, is counterproductive. So,
How much were they going to Brook Lopez in game one, by the way, in the low block? Remember when, you know, against Atlanta when they won game five, Brook Lopez was going down to the low post. You want to get to the free throw line? You want to put Phoenix? I mean, DeAndre Ayton is a decent defender, but he's a better rebounder than he is an individual defender. Why not try to get him into foul trouble? Because he was huge.
Exactly.
I mean, he actually outplayed Giannis in terms of statistics. So why not send Brook Lopez down to the low block? He's a very clever offensive player. He's got a lot, kind of like Pau Gasol, not as good as Pau Gasol, but kind of a similar skill set, particularly when it comes to the low post. He can make the pass, and he can operate from the low block and make shots from there, either turnaround or a jump hook. Maybe send him into the low post, put Giannis into the middle, and then have Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday kind of regulating on the perimeter and break those guys down with penetration but also action in the low post. With Lork Lopez, who can make free throws if you send him there, that could be another adjustment they make for game two. But we'll see if Mike Budenholzer does it. You have a point. He's not always very good at adjustments, but it'll be clear if he made adjustments very early in game two.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Sirius.
So here's my question. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about Budenholzer making adjustments. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Put your Budenholzer hat on. What are you doing in game two that you didn't necessarily do in game one to give your team the best chance to win?
What I'm doing is what Steve said. I'm putting Brook Lopez's behind on the block, trying to get Ayton in foul trouble, especially with my man Dario got the torn ACL. If Frank Kaminsky is in the game, Phoenix is in trouble, okay? You got to get Ayton off the court. The only way to do that is to put him in foul trouble. That's the one adjustment he has to make. Defensively, what I'm saying, stop switching. I mean, I don't care if you're playing a 2-3 zone or 1-3-1 zone. I don't care what the hell you're doing. Stop switching the pick and roll. Play defense. Get over the screen, get in his chest, and play defense. That's what I'm doing.
And by the way, Dario Saric tore his ACL in game one. He's out. You know, he's not going to play. He might even play next season.
Dario's out.
Yeah, so that's another thing is that that's one of their bigs coming off the bench. He's no longer available, so punish that Phoenix Suns team. Make the odds, because DeAndre Ayton is going to have to play more minutes. And even though he's young, make him pay for that. Make him pay for the fact that Dario Saric can't back him up. Only Frank Kaminsky, who's not as good as Dario Saric in terms of athleticism or defense, in my opinion. So make them pay by putting Brook Lopez and Giannis occasionally in the low block as long as it's not in the fourth quarter, and they could go to the hack a Giannis strategy. So maybe you do that in the first half and then maybe Lopez in the second half. You kind of trade off between the two. But punish the Suns and DeAndre Ayton specifically, knowing that Dario Saric isn't going to be available to come off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, okay. TP, serious? Anybody got to add on that? TP, you got it. What's your adjustment for game two?
They
got
to rely on Frank Kaminsky just to come in and give them minutes. I'm not saying to score points or be some Shaquille O'Neal or come up with blocks like the Dikembe Mutombo just to give him anywhere from like a 2 minute to a 4 minute break, because it's going to be detrimental while they're in Milwaukee for 3 and 4. Game two, I feel like they could try to survive off of the crowd momentum and shoot more comfortable shots. And Kaminsky's a jump shooter, and it was bad when, Yarvich went down and Kaminsky's shoes weren't even tied. He had to tie shoes because he knew he was going to be lagging over there on the bench high-fiving. So it's like, you got to be ready for that next man up mentality, and a championship is in front of you. The last time you see something like this, you were in Wisconsin losing a championship. So try to help out. You're in front of some legendary stuff right here. Just like Steve said, I've been talking to Steve for some time, and knowing that we've been hitting off on talking, trying to get them to pay on the defensive side of the ball to get DeAndre in trouble could help the Bucks. But if you got Brook Lopez sitting out there trying to shoot jump shots, they're breathing already on the floor, and that's kind of setting them back.
Yeah.
I can't really look to Budenholzer sitting up here trying to make adjustments now when you can't teach an old dog new tricks. This has been his MO throughout the league. He's been a sideline baller next to Pop, and I don't expect too much of it to change now. So if they can outshoot the Suns and survive, they can. But if it's left up to Budenholzer, I don't think he can X and O right now to the point of Monty Williams, who I think actually deserves it, especially while he was an assistant coach in OKC and lost his entire family. So he's another coach that I think deserves what he's getting right now, man. Shout out to William 7. If y'all don't remember that story, just go look at some of the runs OKC was on when it happened to him.
Yeah, absolutely. I always forget to bring that up. That's a great point. But Budenholzer cannot outcoach Monty Williams. I'm sorry. It ain't going to happen. But he needs to do something because, like I said, the Bucks are in the finals despite him, despite Budenholzer. And there's no nice way to say it. Like, he has done nothing to make any kind of adjustments. It's been Middleton bailing him out. It's been, you know, Giannis bailing him out. Kevin Durant's toe bailing him out. He's done nothing, nothing to make adjustments to make, you know, to make the Bucks be where they are right now, in my opinion. I don't know how anybody else feels about it.
You know, honestly, man, I kind of feel you about it, you know. And okay, so if I'm Coach Budenholzer, this is what I'm honestly doing. First and foremost, I have to switch up my starting lineup. Okay, I'm not starting PJ Tucker. I'm not doing it because honestly, he's a liability offensively. You need to you need somebody coming off the, you know, somebody to start that can run with that starting five. So I will bring Tucker off the bench, and you know, see what happens there. I wouldn't switch on any pick and roll involving Chris Paul or Devin Booker. So if you see a one or a three involved in a pick and roll, we're not doing that. You know what I'm saying? So everything else, you know what I'm saying, play straight up, you know, go, and then again, like my man, like everybody's talking about, go to the rack. And when you get to the free throw line, hit your free throws. You know what I'm saying? Honestly, I don't think the Bucks win this series, okay? But they can win a game or two. And if they win a game or two, that's how it's going to get done. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to go to the free throw line. You're going to have to make smart decisions, and you're going to have to stop switching on pick and rolls. You know what I'm saying? Especially involving Devin Booker or Chris Paul, because they will make you look silly. And honestly, I'm sitting here watching the replay now. You know what I'm saying? The Phoenix Suns just outworked them. Every 50-50 ball they seem to have gotten, you know what I'm saying? Every ball that was up in the air, they was on the ground. They were diving for things. I mean, I get it. They're at home. You feed off that energy. You know, NBA Finals not in the third. But at the end of the day, you got to put your shorts on and play ball. And the Phoenix Suns just wanted it significantly more than the Milwaukee Bucks did yesterday.
I couldn't agree with you more, but, you know, that's where the coaching comes in too, serious, like, to your point. I totally agree with you. Don't switch on Paul and Booker. But Budenholzer's game plan, and TP, correct me, game plan should be I can't let Chris Paul or Devin Booker beat me. Jay Crowder's got to beat me. All right, Cameron Payne's got to beat me. Somebody else has got to beat. If they hit their shots, flowers to them. But I'm going to live and die by letting Jay Crowder hit threes in the corner. I'm not going to let Paul or Booker beat me. That's the game plan. That's where you should be at. That's if you're a smart coach, that's what you're going to do. I'm telling you, in the Super Bowl in 2012, the Giants and Patriots, Bill Belichick said, Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz are going to get double-teamed. They're not going to beat me. Everybody up, Manningham's got to beat me. Manningham made the catch on the sideline, flowers to him. But he lived and died by that from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. That's what Budenholzer's got to say. You can't let Chris Paul go off in this game. You can't let it happen. Like, you know he's the best player, or at least one of the better players on the team. You know he's going to kill you. You can't let him do it. Like, oh, my God. It's just insane to me. It's insanity. That's why Monty Williams is going to outcoach him. The Suns are outworking him. And the Suns have more talent, 1-12. And I said it in my blog. They just have more talent. They're younger. They're faster. They have more talent than the Bucks do, and it shows. I mean, you know, you've seen Cameron Payne at OKC. That kid can ball. He comes off the bench and he's a lift. He's not like a you know, average point guard. He's a lift off the bench. He can play. So I mean, Bucks are in trouble in my opinion. They're in trouble.
I didn't see too much of it when he was in OKC. Even when they brought him in for like the lift for when Russ would come out. You know, Russ is a baller energy, so Russ would be out for like a minute or two. But he really got it once he got out of Chicago. Once we sent him to Chicago, when he left Chicago, I think that's when he started picking his game up. The one person I'm worried about for the Bucks is Pat Connaughton. He's a shooter, and he's not hitting shots, and they're more or less using him as the energy guy, and he can't defend. Like, there was times where Campaign was just taking him to the rim and just getting finger rolls on him. It's like, are you going to stop the ball? Like, don't just sit here and get tucked to the rim, bro. So, like, I don't know if it's just more or less just talent. I just think it's more or less that they got to figure out how the Suns came with an uppercut punch in the first round and like, trying to survive the fight while the legs may be wobbly. So, Portis is still there. Like, they got some pieces on that bench that can make things happen. They just have to make it start out in the game early. And, Brook Lopez, I'm sorry. You're 7-1. Go bury somebody. Like make it a tougher game for the Suns.
Yep.
I get it what you're saying. Like, Booker and Chris Paul can't make that happen, but it's going to happen. Like, once they get freed up and get that one-on-one, they're going to set a screen and then be in front of something that they ideally want with at least 11 or 7 seconds on the clock. If they get that, that's short time for somebody to commit to the double team and watching somebody be wide open for a shot where they're already set up. So they got to pick their poison. Somebody's just going to have to stand their stomach and hope that they miss shots. They had their opportunity because Devin Booker had a bad night shooting from three-point range. So this was an opportunity for them to make it happen, and they got beat up soundly. So game two, they kind of got to stick to their guns, and hopefully the game plan comes out right. And Budenholzer, I don't know what plan he has, but he's going to have to come up with something significant, or who wants to be a millionaire, phone a friend.
You know what I'm having a hard time with?
Man,
Timmy
got jokes.
No, the joke aside, that was funny, but you know, I'm having a hard time reconciling in my mind the world champion Phoenix Suns. Like, I felt that way the first time the Golden State Warriors won a championship, because I go back to the run three days and Donnie Nelson, who if he tried to coach defense, would trip over himself. It's going to be weird to say the world champion Phoenix Suns. You know, it's just going to be weird, but it's a really great team. And the Pacific Division is the class of the NBA right now. I know you're going to hate that on the East Coast, TP. I understand, but the Pacific Division right now, God, that division is loaded. Loaded like a crack addict on a Friday night.
I'm going to tell you that after the Suns run, the Pacific Division won't get another championship. It's over.
Predictions. They always turn out wrong. Don't make emotional predictions. I'm trying to save you from yourself.
I'm just telling you. Listen, LeBron, sand in the hourglass might be over. We've had this discussion.
By the time
we're
going to
find out
next
season, we're going to find out next season. Obviously, next season, you know, LeBron's got to come back healthy and as strong as he'd been, you know, prior to the injury. So if it doesn't happen next season, then, yeah, I'm probably going to come over to your side. But he's got a long off season. You know he's going to be hungry and motivated. So let's see if he can maintain a healthy status next season. If he does, you can't count the Lakers out. You can't count LeBron out.
You're saying hopefully, right? You just said hopefully?
I don't know what the prediction holds,
Did you just say hopefully? You said hopefully twice.
Hold on. Before you drag me down that rabbit hole, I'm going to give you the facts. The facts are no one knows what happens by next season. And by no one, I mean not a single human being with a human brain. No one knows what's going to happen next season. Everyone is hopeful in the offseason. That's what the offseason is all about. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right. I got you. But I do know that
LeBron will be rested. He'll be healthy. He'll be motivated, as will Anthony Davis. And if they're going to win another championship, next year is the season that they need to do it, because if it doesn't happen, and there's a 50-50 chance of that, either they will or they won't, if they don't do it next season, then yes, I think the sunset on LeBron will be much more magnified, for lack of a better way of putting that. But I'm not going to try to predict what happens next season. Why? Because, one, I don't have that ability, and, two, not a single other human being does. It's a long season. A lot can happen. But do I think the Lakers have a shot if they're healthy? Absolutely. They just won a championship. You can't take that away.
I'm going to do this again. I want to do this with reason. You said hopeful about four times now. And
I didn't say hopeful. I didn't say hopeful four times.
Hold on. And if an if was a fifth, we'd be all messed up. So you're using hopeful and if, right? So these are the words that you've used in the past. However, the 2 minute soliloquy you just gave us, right? Yeah, right or wrong. He's hopeful and if a lot, right? Yes or no?
What do you know that I don't? What do you know that I don't?
I'll be practical about it. One word.
Yeah.
Pray.
What's wrong with prayer anyway?
My dudes, come get your son. I hope all the bad things happen to LeBron.
Every team but Sacramento, the Pacific Division, is good. That's the team that needs to pray. Sacramento needs to pray that they could even be in the discussion of the Lakers, Suns, Clippers, and Warriors. If the De'Aaron Fox and
Ben Simmons trade goes down like everybody thinks is bubbling. Hey, you never know. They might be able to get.
Is that the latest trade rumor? Is De'Aaron Fox and Ben Simmons?
I like that one.
Sacramento
like
going to trade De'Aaron Fox for Ben Simmons?
I like that.
That's really going to happen?
I like that for De'Aaron Fox.
No, it's not going to happen. It's one of the rumors that was hitting the circuit. I mean,
yeah, Ben Simmons can only be traded to one team, not several. So. Tell me who's going to get traded to. Otherwise, all these rumors are suggestions in disguise. And quite frankly, there's too much time on people's hands for this crap. So, Instagram's got all sorts of breaking news that's 2 weeks old. So.
Yeah, exactly. When it happens, it happens. Listen, I hope is that LeBron starts the season with all the gray hairs that he's showing right now, so he can prove Father Time is still tapping him on the shoulder.
He's
going to
get the implants in the offseason. Plenty of LA players to get the implants. So
you know my man got that Beijing on standby?
Yeah, he should be on Keith right now. He should be on Keith, to keep the hair on the top of his head.
Keith and Beijing, man. He got them cats on standby. That's part of his $1 million upkeep that he got.
Exactly. Oh, man, I can't stand LeBron.
Yeah, next season is going to be enthralling, that's for sure. So many storylines coming
in. It's
going to
be fun.
It's
going to
be
crazy.
TP, Timeless.
I'll be praying,
that's what I was about to say. Are you finished praying over there? Did you want to talk about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, or are we good?
I mean, if you want, we could talk about that. If you could throw it out, the Matt Sellerman situation and basically,
yeah, let's do that.
Burying these guys, knowing a little too much, and having the liberty to try and kind of, you know, squander his relationship that he could have with any pro athlete, being able to speak to Dan Le Batard, a guy from a network out there, and they just kind of let the faucet leak. And it's kind of funny because it's like how karma works, and watching how Kevin Durant has kind of been listening to everything and, you know, speaking when he needs to speak at the right time. And everybody's like, well, he got rabbit ears. Well, guess what? Everybody has rabbit ears to what you're saying, and you and Kyrie might have just made everything bad for all of the basketball players that have been kind of using things to their advantage, and you guys are basically going to be held accountable moving from here on in, unless Brooklyn's going to continue to be, you know, suckers, if you will, and accepting what these guys are giving them, even though these guys are superstars, so I got to give them that. But this is lunacy what this guy was able to go out there and just say for 50 minutes about these guys, and that's absurd that they gave him so much itinerary to go off of. That's insane. And the people they trust, I was told by, well, not like he told me specifically, but he said it. It's a hip-hop mogul. It's tough to put confidence in the people of princes. So just looking at the people that they were around and having money where they don't care, some of the evilest spirits could be around you. You don't even know it. So you got to watch people that you do have confidence in, because they'll end up trying to terrorize you in the long run. And it's going to be an uphill battle, not only for Kevin Durant or Kyrie, but Brooklyn alike, the Nets alike, in that organization, and whoever they have in there trying to play alongside these dudes and outside of Harden. It's going to be like, what role players is going to want to play with you? As a matter of fact, it's like looking at Joe Harris and, like, the way that he was off through. They end up talking to somebody and getting rid of him because how awful he was. So there's going to be a lot of different scenarios that pan out from, what, July now until October, which is in 3 months. So they kind of buried themselves trusting this guy, and he let everything out the bag on them, and that's horrible.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, nobody will ever talk to this guy again, snitching. I mean, he's giving out details that I know that they don't want put out there. Some of it was, you know, defending some of the guys, but some, you know, like saying Kevin Durant's all about ball, but then turning right around and saying, other than that, he smokes a lot of weed. I mean, like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, Kyrie's good intention, he was donating homes to people. But, you know, he's in his own world. You know, he just doesn't articulate himself. And he runs that organization and basically implying that they ran Atkins out of town. And they have the control over everybody in that organization. Everybody in that organization walks on eggshells. It was pretty bad. And I listened to probably like the first 25 minutes. I was like, this is ridiculous. This guy is dry snitching. Like, this is, you know, this is worse than, you know, I don't know what it is. It's terrible. You know, he's an informant, a.k.a. I'm telling, because he's just telling everything right now. Serious, I don't know if you heard any of it, if you got the chance to listen to the interview, the podcast. Give me your thoughts on it really quickly, bro.
You know, I'm not going to waste too many people's time on it because, again, I think all of us are in lockstep. I don't want to say it's unfortunate because for me, you know, a lot of you guys know I'm a preacher's kid. Okay? And so there's a scripture that says from out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know what I'm saying? So honestly, for me, it doesn't come necessarily as a shock that, you know, Kyrie and Katie, you know, express these things. But, you know what I'm saying? You got to understand that, you know, I think my dad said this like this in one of his sermons, you know what I'm saying? Loose lips sink ships, you know what I'm saying? And if you're going to sit there and, you know, tell your business and tell how you feel and, you know, kind of go off script about some things, you got to come to the understanding that there might come a time when that information gets leaked, whether it was on purpose or accident, and you're going to have to live with the result thereof. Now, you know, KD's in Vegas right now prepping for the, for the Olympics. But once he gets back to Brooklyn, he's going to have to give an account for that. He's going to have to, you know, sit down with whomever he needs to sit down with and be like, yo, my guy, what's good? You know what I'm saying? And I don't think they're going to have trouble attracting people to come play with them, because at the end of the day, you know, that's Kyrie, that's KD, they're two of the, you know, the best players in the world, and, you know, you're going to come chase a championship, but don't expect us to go break bread with the brother. Don't expect us to invite him over for the cookout or not like that. You know what I'm saying? The relationship off the floor will forever be severed with a bunch of these players because of that. You know, I got a Laker fan in the building, you know what I'm saying? This is like that D'Angelo Russell joint where he was videotaping and recording conversations,
yeah.
And there's a meme going around, you know what I'm saying?
Nick Young, Swaggy P, getting a little too swaggy that night.
Swaggy P, man. I'll leave it at that, man. But, yeah, this is definitely bad for both KD and Kyrie. I heard the whole thing, and it was bad, man. It was bad all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Steve.
I'm sorry. This group of Nets players kind of reminds me of the Chicago Bulls. That was a team where they weren't exactly breaking bread on a regular basis either. Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen basically hated Michael Jordan from what I heard. But they were professional enough. They won championship. There was a great leadership structure on that team. And I think the Nets are kind of like that in terms of this is a team not immune to drama. That said, I think what the Nets' biggest problem is who's the leader of that team that is the steadying force. You know, there's no Chris Pauls on this team. There's no LeBron James on that team. There's no Donovan Mitchells or Devin Booker or Trae Young, you know, what we saw in the playoffs this year. Like, the Nets are, they're not going to have trouble getting players to play with them. Clearly they won't, because players are going to let that combination say they should win a championship, but it would not surprise me if they don't, because Kevin Durant has got to be the leader, or James Harden, and maybe James Harden could do it, but sometimes I wonder where his head is at. And, you know, he's a guy that has had his moments in the playoffs where he's completely flamed out, so and hasn't really gotten the team over the top, so maybe he'll figure that out. But Kyrie Irving's a wild card. And I think Kevin Durant, you know, he couldn't make it work with Russell Westbrook. He goes to Golden State, wins a couple of championships, but is unhappy there apparently, and wants to form his own super team with the Nets and decides we're in charge. This is our franchise. It's not the owners. It's not the general manager. It's our franchise. We're going to fire Kenny Atkinson. We're going to bring in Steve Nash, who's essentially going to be a yes man. And Steve Nash did a pretty good job this year, all things considering. I give him credit for how he managed this team, you know, as they were dealing with all the injuries and all the distractions with Kyrie. But when I look at this team, I think of a Monet painting. It looks pretty from afar, but when you get up close, it's a big, fat mess. And I just wonder about the leadership of this team, you know, with Kevin Durant at the helm. Can he be that leader that other guys are that have won a championship, or was he better off being with a Russell Westbrook or being with a Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, where he could be the most dominant player on the floor and win championships as opposed to being the man? I don't know. I do know Kyrie Irving is a wild card, and I do know that James Harden, you know, hasn't always been a reliable playoff performer when his team needed that performance from him the most. He has oftentimes failed in that attempt, and now he's got some nagging injuries to consider. He's not getting any younger either. So I just wonder if this mix is going to produce a championship, because it would not surprise me if they didn't, despite the high level of talent the Nets obviously possess.
Why you got to keep bringing up James Harden struggling in the playoffs, man? Like, what I ever do to you, bro?
Yeah, it's not personal. Stop taking it so personal. What team did he do that for, though?
The Rockets, right? Rockets. Shut your face.
That game 7 against Golden State when they missed, like, you know, 27 or whatever it was, 27 three-pointers in a row. I mean, you've got to close that door when you have the opportunity, particularly when you're playing at home. And like I said, we need to figure it out. We don't know what the future holds, but we know what the past is. And the past is with James Harden that he hasn't always been, you know, the most clutch performer in the playoffs when he's had the opportunity to do so. Could that change? Yes. Will it change? We'll see.
Keep shooting, though. Keep shooting 27 times. Listen, it's a player's league. It's player empowerment. Kevin Durant, this guy said, I don't even want to repeat his name. Was it Matt Sullivan? I really don't want to. But he said, like, listen, Kevin Durant knew in that Golden State series against the Raptors that he was leaving, that he was out of town, like he was going to Brooklyn. Like, he already knew. Like, you know, and that's the name of the game. And he controls the team. He controls the narrative. He tries to control the narrative. That's his biggest problem that, you know, that he talked about in the interview that basically saying, yeah, like, you know, with the burner accounts and constantly going back and forth with fans, like, why? Like, because
he
wants everybody to know that he's
the,
yeah, he wants people to know that he's the dude, that he's that guy, you know, and fine, okay, but you can't change public opinion about you. Like, you people, if you know, I just had this conversation with somebody a couple hours ago. Like, if you don't have any haters, you're not doing something right, okay? If nobody's hating on what you're doing, you're not doing something right. You ain't doing nothing. And that's the point.
Well, thank you for verifying me, my man. I appreciate you verifying me like that. That is great news.
I can't with you, serious. I really can't. I really can't right now. But no, it's really because, like, Kevin Durant, you're gonna have haters because you're doing something right. You're winning chips. You're doing your thing. So it's like, yeah, you're gonna have people hating on you. They're gonna hate. Just like the players hate this ball. I mean, you can't change them all. You can't fight them all. You can't fight C. Hall. But it's what he tries to do. And then Kyrie Irving, like, basically he takes the vacation. And management couldn't do anything. They didn't know where he was. They couldn't say anything about it. I mean, yeah, because he runs the team. And I, you know, listen, would I have loved to have that in New York just so my Knicks could start winning? Probably. But I'm glad I don't have to deal with this situation with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in a Knick uniform, because it seems like a disaster. It's like a disaster. It's a train wreck waiting to happen. But this guy snitching, I mean, you know, I mean, listen, he's an informant. I mean, he has no credibility now. Nobody's going to talk to him. He like TP said, he just killed his credibility. Nobody's ever going to want to do an interview with this guy. I mean, good luck. I hope this book sells, just like Scottie Pippen's. They'll be right next to Scottie Pippen, who was so miserable winning 6 championships, or Michael Jordan. That book will be right next to his. And you guys will have nothing else to do with your life, because no, you'll be pariahs. Nobody else will want to deal with you ever again. But, I don't know. I mean, if there's anything else you guys can dissect from that whole interview, I'm all ears. But, I mean, it's a situation where they picked the coach. They got Atkins fired. He didn't want to be there and deal with the situation. Kyrie basically comes and goes as he wants, as we all knew. Hopefully Harden can come back in shape. But, you know, he pulled the power play to get out of Houston to get to Brooklyn, and he got what he wanted, and he's going to have player empowerment. He's going to have the ability to do whatever he wants with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Guys that didn't mesh with them the first season when Kevin Durant was hurt and could have came back in the bubble, but guys that didn't mesh with them or didn't want to get down what they were doing or found themselves out of town because they run the team. And that's the narrative there.
You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, this informant went ahead and said all of that. But, again, it doesn't come as a shock because, again,
nope.
You know, the situation that I was dealing with in Houston is very similar, you know, to this. So and now it's starting to come full circle as to why James Harden wanted to get out of Houston and get to Brooklyn. Because it was much the same. Like, the Houston Rockets was in a regime change. You know what I'm saying? New coach, new GM. So he wasn't going to be able to, you know, run the thing like he used to run it. And in Brooklyn, you know, he got on the phone with Kyrie and KD, and they were like, yo, this is what we do out here. So and now it makes sense.
You know what I realize, if I could add something here? Talking about guys demanding that they get traded from one team to another. And we've seen that a lot the last few seasons of the NBA, but who have we not seen do that as a superstar? We've never seen LeBron do it. LeBron would leave at free agency, but he would play out his contract. He went into bed and trade out of town. Chris Paul hasn't done that. He's about to win a championship. Giannis Antetokounmpo re-signed with Milwaukee. I think he can win one day if they put a good team around him or a coach, you know, that can coach and make adjustments around him. I think the guy – and Devin Booker is probably going to be loyal in Phoenix, I would imagine. I think guys that fight their way out of town to go to another team because they perceive they can win a championship there, I don't know how many of those guys have actually won a championship trying to do that. It's almost like karma or the NBA gods saying that's not how it works. That's why we have free agency. You should honor your contract and play for the team that you signed up with, signed that contract with, and then use free agency to go where you want. That's what Chris Paul got traded to Houston, then Oklahoma City, now Phoenix. He never demanded a trade out of L.A. when he was with the Clippers or with New Orleans. And now he's about to win a championship. I think there's something to be said for players winning championships who honor their contracts, who honor the commitments that they make. It draws respect. Other guys want to be around them, and those are guys that you ultimately can be successful with because they finish what they start. And I got to look this up, but I think the players that have fought their way out of a team by forcing a trade, I don't know how many of those guys have actually won a championship doing that versus guys like LeBron or Chris Paul letting things happen naturally, waiting for free agency or getting traded, which they had no choice, and then they go on to win a championship. I think those are the guys that win because they have better character, they're better leaders, and that brings out the best in the players that they play with.
Breaking news within the cookout. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the Stanley Cup final champions. They just
back-to-back
won the championship. Yes, sir.
Y'all watching that now?
Yeah, great.
No, I don't care about hockey. Because the Rangers, they stink. You know, so I haven't watched. But the Lightning, what's that, their third cup? Third, is it?
They just went back to back. They won it last year.
Their first one was winning. Yeah, I think it was probably Martin St. Louis. That was back in 03, 04, somewhere around there. I think it's their third, but it's a back-to-back for them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't watch a lot of hockey. Right. No, I don't know. I don't watch a lot of hockey, like I said, because the Rangers stink. They're hopefully getting better. They got a new coach. Got to respect them. Tampa Bay Lightning, from what I remember, they were the dog crap of hockey, and now they've got probably the most talent of any hockey team in the NHL and just pulled off a 1-0 win against the Canadiens to get their chip. So, you know, kudos to them. They're a terrific, terrific team. And they actually, I think they're – it's funny. They're actually in the mix for – NCAA, they're starting a program in Florida to get college players through their system to get, you know, get them paid. So the Lightning are a part of that. I think them and the Panthers are, or I think it's just them. I'm not sure. I got to double check, but they're doing some kind of, they're starting some kind of program to get college players some money in college. So full circle. We came full circle, boys, at the end of the show. Steve, thanks for calling in. Give us a quick shout out as we close up the cookout. Another great show talking a lot of sports with you.
Shout out to all the people that are out and about enjoying life and not wearing a mask. Need I say more? Thanks for having me.
I wear a mask just because I don't want anybody coughing on me, so I don't mind wearing a mask, even though
fair
I got
enough.
Shots. I'm a diabetic. I don't know what you got. You could have the clap. I don't want you breathing on me. But I love you, though. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for calling. Serious. We didn't fight too much today.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. Give me a closeout.
God, man. This is the second week in a row when you and I haven't fought on air. You know what? Next week, it's
you love
me and you. I don't even care. No, I really don't. I hate your guts.
Aww.
You know what I'm saying?
Aww.
You make me vomit. You are scum between my toes. Anyways, this is your boy Spirits from the Rascal Red Crew.
Is that little rascals there? One of the greatest insults
rascal.
Of all time. You're a scum between my toes. Oh! I freaking love that.
Oh, my
I
Lord.
Can't,
that was
I can't.
Hilarious. Sorry, I didn't mean to come off serious. That was hilarious.
I can't.
That was seriously
can't.
Funny. Pun fully intended.
Yo, man, it's your boy, Sheeran's up in F412 and the 703, man. Such a pleasure to be here on another edition of Sports City Chefs Call of Cookout, man. Definitely check out the blog, website, the merchandise. You know, we got some stuff that's about to drop here in the next couple of days, man, so definitely be alarmed to that. Yeah, about that. With that being said, man, it's, again, I'm at this piece, man. It's so much fun. Yo, Barry, hit me in a little bit, man. We got to talk some stuff probably tomorrow, man.
All right, holla, man. Probably not today. I'm tired. The villain's tired. I'm going to go snuggle with my star. TP, you know what it is, but I'll real quick. The hat is up. The hat is on the website. Go purchase the hat. Got all, you know, new merchandise coming. We got more coming on the way. We got a lot for you. Get to the website, read the blogs, the interviews, all that good stuff. TP, you know what to do. Close us out, brother.
Yeah, I just got my new printed shirt with the new print, so I just got that in the mail today. Shout out to the Jordans of the cookouts and the kitchens of the world in Sports City, so I got that. Hopefully the hat will be popping off, even though I like fitted, so I got to try and find a fitted connect to get my hat out there so I can really go out there.
I got
but this t-shirt definitely. This teacher, oh, okay, so then I'm going to holler at you, even though I feel some type of way because he's talking junk about Reggie Bush and them. But sportscitychefs.com, check out the website, the interview, the blog, the chef, the merchandise. Y'all already know, y'all heard me right. All of my boys up in the building, from Aaron to Barry to Steven. I love every last one of y'all. It wouldn't be possible without y'all. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs, Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon, they well in tune, blown like a flower in June, Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom, so tell a friend it's the Sports City Chefs again, pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, Sports City, Sports City, Chef, Chef, yeah, Cap, Taj,
woo, Connecticut,